This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Show a majority of people in Scotland and Northern Ireland favour breakup of the UK as the Scottish Nationalists announced plans for a new independence referendum. The US says it will continue to help Taiwan maintain sufficient self-defence capability as tensions rise between the self-rule island and China. The UN Refugee Agency says the recent tribal clashes in Sudan's Darfur region have killed at least 250 people and displace 100,000 others. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Badr Zanjovic. Good to have you with us. Well, let's take a look at Scotland. New polls indicating that a majority of voters in that country and Northern Ireland are seeking independence from Britain. Separate polls in Scotland, Northern Ireland, England and Wales also indicate that this sense of British identity is disintegrating. Meantime, the Scottish National Party has announced that it will hold a second independence referendum if Prime Minister Boris Johnson refuses to grant one. Scotland held a referendum in 2014 in which more than 55% of voters opted against the independence and more than 44% in favor. The UK government argues that holding a second referendum is against the Constitution. Now, people in Portugal are heading for the polls to cast their ballots in the presidential election, which incumbent Marcelo Rebelo de Sousa has been tipped to win. Nearly 11 million people are eligible to vote, although pollsters expect record-high abstentions due to the COVID pandemic. Most opinion polls put Rebelo de Sousa far ahead of his challengers, socialist Ana Gomes, and far-right populist André Ventura. Low turnout could upset the expected easy win for him. In his final campaign speech, Rebelo de Sousa said that the people should not allow the election to stretch out, urging them to turn out in large numbers to back him win another term and avoid a runoff. Portugal has recorded a steep rise in infections and deaths over the past couple of days. Overall tally, they are reaching 600,000 and 10,000 related deaths. Well, Portugal has registered new records in its daily COVID infections and deaths. It reported 15,000 new cases and 274 deaths on Saturday. Overall, it's confirmed 625,000 cases and 10,000 deaths. Portugal has one of the world's highest infection rates, which has put its health system under increasing strain. Meantime, Germany has reported 16,000 new COVID infections and 879 related deaths. According to the Robert Koch Institute, 2.1 million cases have been confirmed. The death toll in Germany stands at around 52,000. The country has been under lockdown since mid-December. The curbs have been extended until mid-February. In the UK, the government is extending the gap between the first and second Pfizer and BioNTech vaccines up to 12 weeks to give more of its citizens a first dose.
Well, the government's following the very clear advice by the MRSA, our own experts, and from the four chief medical officers of all parts of the United Kingdom. And they said that ensuring that someone is vaccinated for the second jab within 12 weeks is fine, and that's what we're following. And as a result of that, we're ensuring that millions more people can get the first jab and the high level of protection that that provides as quickly as possible.
Senior doctors have challenged the government's decision, saying it's at odds with guidance by the World Health Organization. Britain reported 1,300 deaths from COVID-19 and 33,000 new cases on Saturday. and that takes the death toll there above 97,000, with the overall infections topping 1.6 million. Britain has the highest death toll in Europe, followed by Italy. The Italian health ministry reported 488 fatalities and over 13,000 new cases in a day. Italy has registered 85,000 deaths and around 2.5 million cases since the start of the pandemic. Mexico has reported more than 20,000 new confirmed COVID cases in one day. The new figure by the health minister brings the total number of cases in that country to more than 1.7 million. Mexico has also registered 1,470 new fatalities, taking the overall death toll there to more than 149,000. The government is saying the real number of infected people is likely significantly higher than the official figure. Mexico has one of the world's highest coronavirus death rates. Last week it registered the worst week yet of the pandemic, with a record number of infections and deaths. The Venezuelan president says that he's willing to turn the page with the U.S. under President Joe Biden after years of tensions with the previous administration. Nicolas Maduro called for a new path in his country's relations with Washington based on mutual respect, dialogue, communication, and understanding. The Trump administration had slapped numerous rounds of sanctions on Venezuela, including an oil embargo in 2019, to overthrow the Maduro government. Caracas broke diplomatic ties with Washington in 2019 when the U.S. government recognized opposition leader Juan Guaido as Venezuelan interim president. The United States has reaffirmed its commitment to deepening ties with Taiwan amid rising tensions between the self-ruled island and China. The U.S. State Department says that Washington will continue to help Taipei maintain sufficient self-defense capability. Spokesman Ned Price also urged China to stop pressuring Taiwan and instead engage in meaningful dialogue with the officials there. Meanwhile, the U.S. military says an aircraft carrier group led by USS Theodore Roosevelt has entered the South China Sea. That after Taiwan reported an incursion by Chinese warplanes into its air defense identification zone. Beijing is critical of Washington's boosting of ties with the island, which it views as part of its territory. Political analyst Sainar Tangen says that the Biden administration seems to have adopted the stance of its predecessor on China.
It's an extremely dangerous situation. What you have is the Biden administration reaffirmed basically the stance that Donald Trump has towards China, which is to, in essence, provoke it with a series of trade and other measures. But they said that they would be adopting different tactics. Unfortunately, their support for Taiwan that was voiced during the confirmation hearings make it very clear that they do not intend to abide by the letter of the One China policy, and this is extremely volatile. These nations could be sleepwalking into war. China, for its part, responded by sending airplanes into space that Taiwan claims for its own. And this is the kind of escalation that everyone has been looking to avoid.
The United Nations Refugee Agency has expressed concerns about a resurgence of violence in Sudan's Darfur region, which has caused a fresh flow of refugees to neighboring Chad. The UNHCR says the tribal clashes have killed at least 250 people and displaced 100,000 more. Some 3,500 of the refugees, most of them women and children, have fled to Chad, where they are sheltering under trees without access to basic services. The fighting in Darfur has already spread to the western and southern parts of the region. The violence is a major test for the Sudanese government following the withdrawal of the UN and the African Union peacekeepers from the region earlier this month. Israel's spy chief will reportedly visit Washington in the coming weeks to roll out the regime's demands from the administration of the new U.S. President Joe Biden on the Iran nuclear deal. Mossad chief Yossi Cohen will reportedly push Biden to radically change the 2015 accord if he is ever to rejoin it. The report says that Israel wants to halt Iran's uranium enrichment and production of advanced centrifuges as well as limitations on Iran's regional role. Cohen will be the first senior Israeli official to visit Washington after Biden took office Thursday. Iran saying it won't renegotiate the nuclear deal. Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif has also warned that Biden will lose the opportunity to salvage the accord if he insists on extracting new concessions from Iran. From Bali, I'm joined by Barry Grossman, international lawyer. Good to have you with us, Barry. So the first official to visit the new U.S. president, Cohen, what's going to happen in those talks? What is the demand that Tel Aviv regime will have of the new U.S. administration? Will you see any kind of, do you expect any sea change in the U.S. foreign policy in terms of the Iran nuclear deal under the new administration?
Absolutely not. And for anyone who's been paying attention, it's already been made clear by the Biden administration through his nominee for Secretary of State that the Biden administration doesn't see a quick return to the U.S. Embracing the JCPO again. That will take, if it happens at all, quite some time. And that in the meantime, the U.S. will continue to enforce sanctions against Iran. As for this meeting, of course, it's not surprising that it's happening. My take on these meetings is that the culmination of a process that's already run its course even before the meeting takes place. So my speculation would be that the deal is already done and that this is simply part of the cover story designed to smooth the implementation of the agreement that's been reached in a way that's politically acceptable to Biden and his constituency, all of which is to say, I do not see the United States returning to the JCPO, let alone on the terms which Iran has quite properly made it clear that it would require adherence to in order to itself return to the JCPOA with the U.S. as a signatory country. So there we are. From my point of view, I think the key to all of this rests with Europe and nailing down the position of key European countries like France and Germany and the now non-European country of the U.K. and how that can be reconciled with the position that's been taken by the EU all along. As Iran's leadership has made very clear for a long time, there's really very little hope of being able to reach an understanding with the United States, although the willingness is there on Iran's part. As long as the U.S. returns wholeheartedly to the deal and honors it and compensates Iran for the considerable losses it has had as a result of these absurd unilateral sanctions imposed by the United States and its acts of open piracy in the last 4 years. That simply is not going to happen. And Israel has made it quite clear. They've been quite open about their plans to intensively lobby the Biden administration in order to prevent the United States from re-engaging the JCPOA. And of course, even as we read Israeli news reports about this, the terms which the head of Mossad is supposedly bringing to Washington in order to leave room for the U.S. to rejoin the JCPOA don't mention the real concern, which is, of course, Iran continuing to develop its non-nuclear defensive missile program. That issue, of course, is addressed by the JCPOA itself in one of the annexures, which makes it very clear that Iran has no obligations, except that it would be nice, according to the other signatory countries, if it refrained from developing missile technology designed for the purpose of developing a nuclear payload. In the meantime, what we see unfolding now is that the same old lies that Israel has been peddling for decades about a supposed existing nuclear program are going to be peddled to Biden. And of course, even Obama had the sense to reject those claims and prefer instead
the position consistently communicated by all 17 U.S. intelligence agencies in the lead-up to the JCPOA for many years, namely that Iran does not have a nuclear weapons program, has made no political decision to start one, and if Iran were to develop one and break out, that it would be recognized in time to stop it.
Okay, thank you very much for comments and contribution from Bala. That was Barak Grossman, international lawyer there for us. Now moving on, a Palestinian man has been killed during clashes with Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank. 50-year-old Fahd Sabti Judah died after inhaling tear gas fired by regime forces near the city of Nablus. No further details provided. Israeli forces often violently clash with Palestinians in occupied territories. They often resort to lethal force, accusing the Palestinians of attempting to engage in violence against Israeli troops. Three civilians have been killed and seven others injured in an artillery attack near the northern Syrian city of Aleppo. A woman and two kids were killed in the shelling carried out by Turkish military forces and their allied militants. The targeted regions are controlled by Kurdish fighters. Turkish-backed militants have conducted similar attacks on the area in the past. In December 2019, 11 civilians, including eight children, were killed by militants' mortar fire. At least 11 members of Iraq's popular mobilization units have been killed in a terrorist attack in the central Salahuddin province. Security sources saying that 10 others were also wounded in that attack, which they blame on Daesh terrorists. The assailants used light weapons and the cover of darkness to ambush the PMU's 22nd Brigade east of the city of Tikrit. That attack comes 2 days after the terrorists killed 32 people in a twin suicide bombing in the capital Baghdad. Daesh began a terror campaign in Iraq in 2014, overrunning vast swaths of the country. Baghdad declared victory over the terrorists in 2017 following an intense military campaign in which the PMU played a major role. Author and journalist Eric Wahlberg says that the U.S. has not assisted the Iraqi forces in their fight against terrorism.
Well, obviously it's ISIS, and it was ISIS last week with the 32 dead. So this really looks like a call to arms on part of ISIS against Biden. It's giving him the heads up that they are still strong and that the U.S. troops really don't do anything to improve the situation. So. The PMU was vital to fighting them, and they should play an important role continuing today. Trump was very bad on this. He was clearly not doing anything to seriously fight ISIS. He was focused on Iran and making Israel happy.
Chinese rescuers have pulled out 11 gold miners to safety 2 weeks after they were trapped by an underground explosion. Footage shows the first miner being lifted out of a mine shaft on Sunday morning. He was rushed to the hospital, followed by two other batches of trapped miners. Chinese state broadcaster has confirmed the death of one of 22 miners trapped hundreds of meters underground in Xinjiang, a major gold-producing region. Specialist teams have been battling with difficult conditions to help rescue workers since the explosion rocked Hushan Mine on the 10th of January. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, January 24th, 2021. I'm Atefer Fani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is a Sunday program where your views are presented through emails and letters. So contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. Or if you have any messages for our dear listeners around the world, then record your voice and send it to us and get your voice heard. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. Dear listeners, these reception reports are very useful and important to us in IRIB English Radio, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports enable us to provide a better service to you, dear listeners, throughout the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will normally be receiving a QSL card from us. However, as you know, these days, with the outbreak of coronavirus, don't expect a QSL card from us in IRIB English Radio. As you may know, sending any material on behalf of our radio is temporarily halted due to the pandemic. So please be patient until we get back on track and until the disease is controlled around the world. And here, I truly appreciate those of our dear listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including P.S. Sukar from India, Jacques Agustin from France, and Assis Hernando from Spain. P.S. Sukar, Jacques, and Assis Hernando. Here, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. Also, I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us emails and letters from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later during our program, I will read their emails and letters, including an email from Hector Fria Jofre from Chile. Hector is one of our regular listeners. Thank you, Hector. Also, we have an email from one of our regular listeners, Masahiro Kobayashi from Japan. Also, Ivan Zeleny from Russia, one of our regular listeners, has sent us an email. And also, we have another email from Paulo Duarte from Portugal. Thanks a lot. A million thanks to you. We want you to know again how much we value these emails and letters and also your views. Dear listeners, stay with us until the end of the program. I will be back after the music with all these kind messages, just in seconds. Again, welcome to the program. Here we have an email from Chile. This email is from Hector Fria Jofre. Hector, one of our regular listeners, says, "Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, please accept my greetings from the city of Santiago, Chile. Regarding listening to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, I am always attentive. But the bad propagation has not allowed me to have the opportunity to tune in to your radio regularly. However, I do hope that the technical problem will be solved very soon. I will be able to listen to your programs and appreciate the traditional music and interesting programs. Best regards from Santiago." Salam and greetings to you from Iran, Hector Friohofre from Chile. I do express my appreciation for writing to IRIB English Radio, dear listener Hector Friohofre from Chile. We are so glad that you enjoy our programs. Regarding your notification about having the problem, as you may know, we have a website at that is parstoday.com/en. If you had someday in the future you had a problem with listening to our programs regularly, you can refer to our website, that is www.parstoday.com/en, and there you can find the archive of our programs there. Anyway, many thanks for writing to IRIB English Radio. Write to us soon. We are waiting for your views about our broadcast. And from Japan, we have an email from Masahiro Kobayashi. Masahiro Kobayashi is one of our regular listeners who says, "Dear sir or madam, my name is Masahiro Kobayashi and I live in Japan. I heard one of your stations some time ago and sent a reception report, but the mail was rejected. I'm not sure where to mail it, so I'm sending it to you via post. I will be pleased if this report is verified. Sincerely yours." Greetings to you, Masahiro Kobayashi from Japan, and many thanks for writing to IRIB English Radio. Regarding your confusion about sending your mails, actually your emails, you can refer to our website at www.parstoday.com/yen, and there you can find the needed information about the email address or other addresses of our radio. Of course, I will refer to my colleagues about this problem, I mean rejection of your email, but anyway, for the time being, you can refer to our website, and there you can find the information about the exact email address. Thank you again, Masahiro Kobayashi from Japan, for sending this email to IRIB English Radio. We're looking forward to hearing from you very soon in the future, Masahiro. Dear listeners, what about a short break? Welcome back. Here we have an email from Russia. This email is from Ivan Zeleny, one of our regular listeners. Ivan Zeleny says, "Thank you very much for your email. In our city, real winter has already come. The air temperature at night drops significantly. The good news is the transmission of radio signals in the short and medium waves is getting better every day, and the broadcasting of the Islamic Republic of Iran sounds even louder and cleaner. I'm glad to know that your radio station is listened to in many countries of the world, and not only by Muslims, but also by representatives of other faiths and cultures. And many people, including myself, really like to learn about traditions, crafts, life, architecture, sites, poetry, and cultural events in Iran. I'd like to listen to more cultural programs and also political programs, more Iranian folk music and poetry, as well as information for tourists, and more people will be able to visit Iran and see everything with their own eyes, rather than learning about it from propaganda hostile radio and television programs from those who do not respect the culture of the traditions of Iran. The cinema of Iran is also very interesting because there are films with a very deep meaning and about the life situations of any person who lives not only in Iran, but all around the world. I have watched several Iranian films directed by Abbas Kiarostami in particular. Therefore, if possible, tell in your programs about the latest in the film industry of Iran. It's very good if you can send electronic QSL cards, because often due to different problems such as coronavirus pandemic, letters practically do not reach your regular radio listeners. Therefore, the idea of sending EQSL is just great and less financially costly and faster. I wish all IRIB employees all the best and success and quality programs. Salam and greetings to you, Ivan Zeleny from Russia. This greeting is from IRIB English Radio and the Islamic Republic of Iran. Many thanks for writing such interesting email to IRIB English Radio. Of course, Ivan Zeleny from Russia, we want you to know that we very much value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. This was such a nice and interesting and really inspiring message. As I have, realized that you enjoyed our programs. As you said, you like Iranian folk music and poetry, and it seems that you enjoyed the kind of programs in IRIB English Radio that is about the culture and traditions of Iran. Of course, we have different programs about the culture and traditions of Iran, including Close Up Iran. We have Iranian markets and different kinds of programs that are available now in the in the archive of our programs, and some of them are broadcasting in different days of the week. As I said, like the Iranian market, like the Close Up Iran, and different kinds of programs. As you said, of course, thanks God. It seems that you're enjoying better service. I mean, the signals, as you said, the transmission of radio signals in short and medium waves are getting better every day, and the broadcasting of IRIB English Radio sounds even louder and cleaner, and it's great. And also, it's a pleasure, as you said, we have different listeners around the world, in many countries of the world, and not only by Muslim countries. We have different listeners around the world in different faiths and cultures around the world, and it's a pleasure for us in IRIB English Radio. And it seems that you enjoy the Iranian cinema. Of course, we have broadcast a series about Iranian films and cinema. And in the future, of course, we will broadcast programs about the Iranian films and Iranian cinema in the future, soon in the future, of course. And nice suggestion, sending electronic QSL card. Thank you. Ivan Zeleny from Russia, it was such a nice message. Thanks a lot. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon in the future. Ivan Zeleny from Russia, we wish you all the best. Write to us soon. Thank you. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other emails and letters from around the world. It was such a nice and beautiful piece of Iranian folk music. And here we have an email from Portugal. This email is from Paulo Duarte. Paulo Duarte says, Thank you for your reply. I'd like to receive QSL cards from your radio stations, but unfortunately, I don't listen shortwave radios anymore, and the only I access your broadcasts through internet. And of course, I listen to your radio via your website, and I have to say that your website condition is very good. I just don't know about your program's schedule. Could you please send me a copy of that, please? First of all, greetings to you, Paulo Duarte from Portugal. Thanks a lot for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. I don't know why you don't have the access to listen to shortwave radios, but I hope in the near future you can gain access to listening to shortwave radios, and of course, IRIB English Radio shortwave. That's great. For the time being, you have access to our website, yes. And about your trouble and your confusion about having access to program's schedule, I inform you here that you can refer to our website at www.parstoday.com/EN, and then you can get the program's schedule there. Thanks a lot for writing to IRIB English Radio, Paulo Duarte from Portugal. Dear listeners, time tells me we have to skip to the other part of our program, that is today's interview. This interview is conducted with one of our regular listeners. Please take a listen.
My name is Chris Jensen. I'm living in Belgium. I'm Belgian. I'm working as a civil servant for the government here in Belgium, but I also travel a lot because traveling is my passion, and especially traveling to the Middle East. I've been visiting many countries in the Middle East, and I visited also Iran, which was a very, very nice experience. I'm listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, so Tehran Radio, and several mediums. I'm listening to it on shortwave, but also on the internet and on satellite. And I think that's the future, because a lot of people think that shortwave is an old technology, which is dying at the moment. But I don't believe this. I think if you want to reach the world, you have to use a media mix. So it's not if, but and. So I listen on different medium to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. So to my opinion, shortwave is still alive, and it's not a dead medium. I think it has still a bright future in it. Yes, I want to send my greetings to everyone, and I call upon them to, if they can, visit Iran yourself, because, as I said before, there are many misconceptions about Iran here in the Western world, and my experience last year was a wonderful experience. I experienced Iran as a very friendly country with friendly people. It's a very modern country with good infrastructure. And everywhere where I came, people were open to me. People tried to help me. So I'm calling upon the listeners, please visit the country yourself. It's the best way to get an idea about Iran and to learn about the country.
Here we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special. Keep in touch and have a good time.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to englishradio@irib.ir. That is one word, englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.passtoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/passtodayenglish. Thank you all for being with RIB English Radio.
The debate.
Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, on the last day of the Trump administration, U.S. and the UAE signed a deal with Washington agreeing to sell planes and drones to Abu Dhabi. The UAE will purchase up to 50 F-35 jets, 18 armed drones, and other weapons. Well, the deal is worth $23 billion. The okay from Washington has come after the UAE agreed with the U.S.'s pushing Abu Dhabi to recognize Israel and establish relations with Tel Aviv, which it did. Now, the UAE embassy in Washington, upon announcing the sale, has said that the UAE is committed to de-escalation in the region. We'll take a look at what all of this may mean on this debate. Stay tuned.
Just hours before his term as the 45th U.S. president ended, Donald Trump finalized a controversial arms deal with the United Arab Emirates. The UAE embassy in Washington confirmed signing a $23 billion worth of an arms deal with the U.S. It said Washington has agreed to deliver 50 F-35 jets, 18 armed drones, and other defense equipment. The F-35 jets are a major piece of the weapons deal, which was awarded to Abu Dhabi in return for a normalization deal with Israel. The UAE had long sought the means to purchase F-35 jets, but failed to do so until the Trump administration came into picture. The armed drones purchase is also a significant one. Experts believe it would be the second largest sale of U.S. drones to a single country. The arms deal came despite massive oppositions in and outside the U.S. In December, there were two attempts to block portions of the UAE sale. Both of them failed despite growing calls from anti-war and human rights groups to halt it. Critics of the deal believe that these weapons would likely be used to inflict harm in Libya and Yemen and could further destabilize West Asia. The UAE has been one of the main players of the Saudi-led coalition that waged a years-long war against Yemen. Abu Dhabi is also involved in the Libya conflict, where the absence of a unified government brought several countries in the war zone with the aims of controlling the oil-rich country. It has also supplied weapons to militant groups in Syria. The administration of former U.S. President Donald Trump has been pushing for several arms deals in his final weeks in power. First came the approval of $290 million worth of bombs for Saudi Arabia on December 29. On the same day, the State Department also announced a $4 billion sale of Apache helicopters to Kuwait. There was also a $104 million deal for defense equipment to outfit the plane of Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi and another $65.6 million in precision targeting equipment for Egyptian warplanes. Critics blame Washington for supporting wars and destruction by selling arms to nations that have been destabilizing West Asia. They also warn against the possibility of creating an arms race, which will cause nothing but more deaths and chaos.
I'd like to welcome my guests to this debate, journalist and author Daniel Lazar out of New York and journalist and political commentator Said Mohsen Abbas out of London. Thank you both for being with us. Let's start this off in New York. Daniel, why do you think that this deal was not inked until the last day of Trump's reign?
Well, Trump wanted to slip it in under the wire before Biden took office, sort of present the new administration with a fait accompli, making it harder for Biden to back away from the deal. I don't think Biden will back away from the deal because I think he basically agrees with the logic of Trump's foreign policy, which is to arm the Gulf states against Iran.
Okay, yeah, I was going to ask you if you thought that Biden actually wanted to back away from that deal, but you've answered it. So, Mohsen, initially Israel didn't agree for the UAE to buy the F-35. So you think that was a ploy on its part, or did it later become convinced that it should? Your assessment of that side of things?
I think the assessment has probably changed to some degree. They've decided that they need their erstwhile silent partners, the UAE, the Saudi Arabians, Jordan, all of those buffer Muslim countries, including Egypt as well, amongst that. They've decided that they need them now to act as a physical buffer. And I think that they've initiated that partly with the Saudis' war on Yemen. You can see it there. You can see that the UAE has been commissioned to enter Yemen as well, and they've been also committing atrocities and violating that state's sovereignty. They've also, significantly, the UAE has also been allowed to start building up ports across the region. I think Somalia, Ethiopia, they've been trying to get ports at Socotra, the island just off Yemen. So you can see that there's an expansionism. And the UAE, I think from an Israel point of view, is a sort of major, it's a necessity now. Previously, perhaps they thought by handing over this equipment, it might not be reliable, it could end up in the wrong hands, and they didn't trust them. What's more likely is that the Israeli Defense Force, the American military, are taking hands-on control of all of this this weaponry. Yeah, and it's also a backdoor way of them passing more weaponry to Syrian front and to the Yemeni front as well, I imagine. But the UAE has been a significant purchaser of U.S. military equipment for obviously years. The latest agreement, Defense Cooperation Agreement, came into force on May the 24th, 2019. And since then, the U.S. has been pumping out $28.1 billion in active government-to-government sales. Cases with the UAE under foreign military sales systems. So there's a lot of financial activity on the military front that's been going on. And of course, the double whammy is that America, which is economically, of course, troubled as well, is using the Arab states as a cash cow to milk them for sale of military hardware. Of course, this goes into the American economy as well. Israel, I think their purpose is really to bolster up these states as more practical frontline partners for them against what they would see as the axis of resistance threat.
Okay. Well, Daniel, the UAE already spends around $30 billion on its annual military budget. Iran spends around $17 billion annually. Even if Abu Dhabi considers Tehran as an adversary, it already spends almost twice the amount that Iran spends on its military budget. Why do you think that's the case? What does it all mean?
Well, I think that the other guess is correct. And I think that the UAE wants to transform itself into a regional military power, a regional military, economic, and strategic power. It's establishing bases down the Red Sea into the Arabian Sea. It's trying to extend its clout throughout the region, and certainly bolstering its military is one way of doing that. It wants to be a big league player. And the U.S. sees nothing wrong with that. The U.S. rather likes the idea because Saudi Arabia is obviously deeply unstable. So therefore, the U.S. could use a substitute in that region. But I must emphasize that it's all part of a grand orchestrated strategic offensive aimed at isolating Iran and Iran's allies in Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon.
Said Mossad, the UAE embassy in Washington has said that it is committed to de-escalation in the region. Now, it does not appear that the amount of planes and drones that it will be acquiring is going to be used for this de-escalation. Your take on what is said, and actually we see the transaction that is going to be made.
Absolutely right. I mean, we can see from Joe Biden's posturing that he's already now going to review all these contracts and deals, so he says. But that review is, I think, going to be one of going through the motions. And in fact, I think the indication is that they're not happy with the Trump plan to de-escalate what little there was. You know, in Iraq, they were pulling out troops, ostensibly 2,500 troops out of 5,000, officially on record. We don't know the reality. So I don't think Biden has a track record which gives us any hope that he's going to change the Trump policy. In fact, it could be much, much worse. His track record is very much for supporting the beginning of wars, far more likely, some would say, than Donald Trump starting a war with the Islamic Republic or opening up new fronts against the resistance axis. You see, of course, the UAE, Biden will look at this, and during his term in the American administration, he's overseen the Afghanistan and Iraq campaigns, the expeditionary participants, and the UAE is actually in that global coalition, hook, line, and sinker. They co-lead the global coalition's communications working group, for instance, providing what the US State Department says is strong support for counter-messaging and countering violent extremism through its Sawab and Hidayah centers, and also a co-lead of the Coalition Stabilization Working Group. So they're very much at the heart of this. It's all done under the guise that the UAE is helping America fight the war on terror. In fact, the reality is that they are probably part and parcel of the mechanism for the Americans and the Israelis keeping control of that region.
So what you're saying, Said Mohsen, basically, if I understand you, is that under a Biden administration, the situation will probably get worse than in the region because, as a matter of fact, de-escalation is going to be the last thing on the agenda. Is that what you're saying?
I think so. I don't think you can see the juggernaut, the industrial military arms complex that the U.S. Spearheads needs these wars. They need these conflicts. They rely on them. You know, $7.5 trillion has gone into these wars over the last 20 or 30 years. That's a conservative estimate that we have. We know that they're signing off on more of these contracts. What we're seeing today is the latest of that. But, you know, prior to what the Americans have been trying to sign off here, they've had CH-47F cargo helicopters, terminal high-altitude area defense, the THAAD missiles, as they're known, and also newly refurbished AH-64E helicopters, large aircraft, infrared countermeasures. You know, it goes on these systems. You know, they even have Blackjack unmanned air vehicles, the Patriot sort of Javelin AIM-9X Sidewinder. I could go on. The list of actual really nasty military hardware is endless. And, you know, they've authorized, as I said earlier, permanent export of over $7.2 billion in defense articles to the UAE via their direct commercial sales process. That's an admission by the U.S. State Department. You don't know what's going on the black market, of course. Right. Whatever's going on the side, it's a different story.
Well, Daniel, as you said earlier, and also said Mohsen, that basically what Washington is doing is trying to threaten Iran. So I want to look at that side of things. In a new Biden administration, do you think that this is the line that's going to be continued, that they want to create more pressure against Iran? Or do you see a possibility of the Biden administration going in a different direction?
I believe it's the former. I think that the Biden administration will maintain as hard a line against Iran as the Trump administration, if not even harder. I mean, it's determined to do the bidding of Israel, as much as Trump did. And Israel has just one priority. It sees Iran as the as its strategic enemy, the most dangerous force in the middle in the entire region. It wants Iran beaten back, even to the point of imposing regime change. The U.S. has happily joined in that in that viewpoint, and I don't see Biden really differing from that at all.
Mm.
Even Biden's rhetoric about the JCPOA, I mean Biden has made it clear that he will only re-enter the JCPOA if he's able to gain further concessions from Iran regarding its support for the Syrian government, Hezbollah, Shiite forces in Iraq, and of course the Houthis in Yemen. So Biden is determined to increase the diplomatic pressure on Iran over what Trump had already imposed.
Do you see, staying with what you've just said, do you see this new administration more or less pro-Zionist than the previous administration?
At least as much as the previous administration, if not more so. The alliance between the U.S. and Israel just gets closer and closer. And that means that the U.S. adopts Israel's most militant attitudes vis-a-vis Iran. So I just don't see any hope for any kind of realignment in the Persian Gulf. I just see an ever tougher stance on the part of the U.S.
Mm. Well, some experts say that Abu Dhabi sold out its Palestinian brethren for basically $23 billion worth of military equipment and accepted to normalize relations with Israel. Your take on that assessment, and overall, what does it mean? Not only, of course, we saw that with the UAE, but we also saw it with Sudan and Saudi Arabia and Bahrain.
Well, of course, the American policy in the Middle East is primarily, obviously, for raping oil and resources of that region. Secondly, to maintain dictators and leaders who basically don't give individual sovereignty to the nations, but rather support the interests of Israel and America. That's been going on for decades. And finally, of course, as we said, the cash cow business of taking arms sales is now the more obvious one. So, look, the thing is, I think that the bottom line is that the UAE and this normalization process was part of really that entire overall American and Israeli joint policy in the region. It's just now that they really called in their, if you like, their erstwhile silent partners to come into openly normalizing. And what the UAE is doing is essentially putting all of its eggs in the basket of the Zio-American imperialist powers in that region. And of course, it is on the borders of Iran, well, on the sea borders at least. And that poses, a huge threat for Iran. It also poses a problem for the UAE, because if the saber-rattling that goes on between Israel and Iran, or America and Iran, continues, and somebody, decides to take a rash move, of course, these bases in the UAE are some of the bases which will launch any possible attacks on Iran. And Iran and the establishment has already made it very, very clear several times. The administration has made it clear that the allies of Israel, those who are normalizing Israel's apartheid in Palestine, those who are supporting terrorist organizations across the Middle East, those who are undermining the independence and integrity of the people of the region, the ordinary citizens, are on their target list as well. And if anything happens to Tehran, or anything happens to the major nerve centers of certainly the Islamic Republic, the UAE, Abu Dhabi, et cetera, will all be number one on the hit list. And Tel Aviv, of course, it has also been warned. So it is a really fragile situation, and the world really needs to take note. There's an ambivalence in America, there's an ambivalence across the world stage in this Cold War, or this hot war, which has actually been played out as well. simultaneously. But the world is going to ill afford to ignore this for very much longer, because it only takes a little mistake, a little calculation to go wrong. Right. And what we can see happen with the case of General Soleimani and the tolerance and the patience that the Islamic Republic employed by only attacking one or two American sites could run out, and they may be forced to go further. The military exercises in the